Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
Dr. Neho is a lead author on the U.S. Climate Assessment Report and has spent her time since writing this report on spreading the word about climate change. She was always faced with the difficult task of convincing people who had stakes in things that would be affected by acknowledging the information in her report. In her newest book, Saving Us, A Climate Scientist's Case for Hope and Healing in a Divided World, she discusses the challenges associated with these conversations at both the micro and macro level. So who is Catherine Hayhoe? How has she learned to get people to acknowledge the reality of climate change? And is she the best or worst person to strike up a discussion with about the weather? All this and more on this episode of Breaking Math. Episode 66, Hayhoe, let's go.
Hayhoe, let's go. Hayhoe, let's go.
I'm Sophia.
And I'm Gabriel.
And I'm Meryl.
And you're listening to Breaking Math. With us, we have on Dr. Catherine Aho, who you may know from the introduction. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. I actually just saw you a couple hours ago on YouTube on the live, and then I wrote to Laura and said, here's our interview, and she said that you are booked from that time until now. I'm amazed at how busy you are. How do you keep your energy to keep doing these amazing interviews?
Lots and lots of chocolate.
Okay.
Dark as possible.
Okay. I actually had a conversation about this at Starbucks because I'm always plugging our show. And I said, what if they had a Starbucks drink named after Dr. Hayhoe? So I'm going
to
see about
it'll
that.
It'll have to be a chocolate bar instead.
Yeah. Oh, a chocolate bar instead. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Something called the, Hayhoe Let's Go Triple Espresso or something like that. So.
Totally. I would drink that every day.
Nice. Are you coffee or are you more tea?
Well, I'm actually more tea. I have a huge cupboard full of tea and it has to be black, but there's all kinds of different teas that are black.
Okay.
But I do drink coffee sort of like mid-afternoon if I need something to keep me going.
And with us also we have on someone we've been wanting to have on the podcast for a few years now. Well, he kind of has been on the podcast for a few years. It's Elliot Smith. Not the other one, who wrote the theme song for our podcast.
Yeah.
So welcome, Elliot.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And Elliot, we invited you because, of course, earlier I had challenged you to write a couple of songs that would be good representations of the climate change conversation. And you more than delivered. We have probably five musical parodies all squeezed into about 2 minutes. So we'll get to that at a later part in the episode. So that's very, very exciting. Thank you for joining us. So I suppose what we'd like to start off with is a very, very recent event. I know that recently there was the event COP26. I have a section on my outline. I would love to hear about your experience with COP26. I included to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly and everything and your take on it at this point.
Well, I'll tell you what was the most interesting thing about it. And it was the number of people who were there representing almost every people group in every part of the world that you can imagine. So officially, it's where every country goes with a team of negotiators to negotiate the fine details of the Paris Agreement. And the original goal of COP26 was to negotiate the details of what they call Article 6, which is so arcane that I'm not even going to bother to explain it right now. Because the main reason that everybody else was there was to say, we need more. So far, countries haven't promised enough to hold warming below 2 degrees or 1.5, even better. And we need more promises and we need more action.
Now, I was just going to say, you mentioned these numbers, 1.5 and 2 degrees, which is, like everyone who's familiar with climate science knows those numbers pretty well. But do you want to kind of just super quick top level go over that?
Yes, absolutely. So our planet is warming now faster than any time in the history of human civilization. And it's already warmed by 1.2 degrees Celsius, which is just over 2 degrees Fahrenheit. And people might say, well, that doesn't sound like much. I mean, you go outside, it goes up and down by 20 degrees over the course of a day. But what we have to realize is the average temperature of the planet is as stable as that of the human body over the history of human civilization on this planet. So our body temperature goes up and down by a few tenths of a degree every day. That's how much the whole temperature of the planet has gone up and down over all of human history on this planet, which is just insane when you think about that. And now it's going up faster and faster. And so in 2015, all the countries in the world went to Paris, and that was called COP21, and because it was the 21st Conference of Parties, and this one now this year was the 26th Conference of Parties. So at COP21, all the countries in the world agreed to limit warming to below 2 degrees Celsius, which is about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and below 1.5 degrees Celsius, which is just over 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit, if we can. So that's where those numbers come from. And they're not magic numbers. So, you know, if we end up at 1.49, it doesn't mean everything's okay. We already see impacts today. And then if we end up at 1.51, it doesn't mean we're going to hell in a handbasket. It means we're a lot better than if we're at 1.52. And if we're there, it's better than if we're at 1.53. So every little bit of warming counts. And these aren't magic numbers, but they're the targets that the world set to get there. So all the countries in the world went to Glasgow to talk about how they could get there more effectively and better, because they're nowhere near there yet. But the interesting thing was 90% of the people there were not country negotiators. 90% of the people there were everyone else you can imagine. There were children and young people and parents and grandparents. There were farmers. There were Rotarians. There were artists and musicians. There were theologians and students and activists. And there were people who grow sustainable coffee and chocolate. There was anybody that you could imagine from all around the world, all there, because they understood that climate change matters to every single one of us, and they were using their voice, the most powerful force we have, to demand climate action.
Yeah, and in fact, I've been following you and Dr. Michael Mann, and I see there's just so many people posting about COP26. And generally, what I find is it fair to say a tepid optimism?
I think you could say the glass is both half full and half empty, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you have to realize, first of all, the magnitude of this challenge. I mean, there's no other example when every country in the world has come together for a huge global treaty, because that's essentially what this is, to agree to phase out the entire energy basis of their society. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is radical what countries are being asked to do. Yeah. So before the Paris Agreement 6 years ago, we were heading for a 4 degrees Celsius warmer world. Now, thanks to the pledges and promises made in Glasgow, we're heading for a 2.4 degree warmer world. Wow. It's still not where we want to be, but it is a heck of a lot better than we were 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So for that, I'm grateful. Okay. But when you go to COP and you realize that there are 500 representatives of the fossil fuel industry, which, just to be clear, burning fossil fuels is responsible for 75% of this problem, and only 90 companies are responsible for 2/3 of carbon emissions since the dawn of the industrial era. I'm talking the 1700s. And then you have 500 of their representatives at COP, which is more than I think all the Pacific Island states sent altogether, far more. You can't help but feel discouraged that the balance of power and wealth in this world is still acting to try to keep us addicted to fossil fuels as long as possible so that they can make a short-term profit in their quarterly returns while the world burns. Who would not be angry and frustrated at that?
So would you say that workers' rights is an environmental concern?
Absolutely. So the way I would put it is slightly different, which is whatever we already care about, it is 99 times out of 100 already being affected by climate change in some way, shape, or form, which makes you the perfect person to care about climate change, because what you already care about is being affected. So whether you care about gender equity, whether you care about poverty and hunger, whether you care about, you know, people dying from diseases that nobody should be dying from in 2021 just because they lack basic health care, whether we care about racism, whether we care about the systemic redlining of low-income neighborhoods here in North America, whether we care about the preservation of species and biodiversity, whatever it is that we care about is being affected by climate change today. And because of that, to care about climate change, we don't have to be a certain type of person or live in a certain type of place or vote a certain type of way. We just have to be one thing, and that one thing is quite literally a...
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino's a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Human being living on this planet.
And see, that's also the thing that sometimes worries me is that, I mean, Marilyn, Elliot, and Gabriel, way in here, but it seems there's a lot of people who will not be affected by climate change because of the specter of death. You know, they'll die of old age before they are affected by a lot of this stuff. And a lot of these people have a chronic problem with selfishness. And like you said, it's hard not to be discouraged. But I was struck by the story of how you, I believe it was the Rotary Club, how you convinced them by reformatting your presentation to not include the word weather. Do you want to chat about that story real quick? Because I think it applies.
Sure. So that's actually, I think, two different stories that you're thinking of, both of them taking place in Texas. I would start by saying that we often see people as selfish and uncaring, and there certainly are some people who deserve those labels. But what I found is that a lot of people, either they're already worried, but they don't know what to do, so they just kind of shove it down. So they might look uncaring, but it's simply because they don't know what to do about it. And we just can't carry that burden without knowing how to act. And or feel a strong sense of psychological distance from the issue. So a lot of people, and polling data actually bears this out, a lot of people see climate change as a real issue, but one that is only going to affect future generations, or plants and animals, not humans, or people who live far away, but not me. So what's really effective is to bring it here and now and talk about how no matter where you live, and if each of you told me where you live, I could tell you exactly how you're already being affected by climate change today. Mm-hmm. So connecting the dots to talk about how we're already being affected, and not just in terms of the weather, but in terms of things that matter to us. So whether you love beach vacations or you're really into beer, or like me, you really enjoy skiing and you need snow to do that, or whether you're really into birding, or whether you just like a healthy economy, yeah. no matter what people already care about, they already have the reasons to care. And our job is not to make them care for the same reasons we do. Our job is to help them connect the dots between why they already care and why climate change matters. So that's what I did in the two stories you're thinking about that I tell in the book. The first story was when I was asked to speak to our local Rotary Club. And I'm not a Rotarian, so I did not know that they have this thing called the four-way test that they apply to all the decisions they make. So I walked into the hotel ballroom and they very conveniently printed out their value system on a giant 5-foot banner and propped it up in the hall. And I walk in and I see the four-way test and I'm like, okay, is this the truth? Yes, climate change is the truth. Is it fair? Absolutely not. Climate change is profoundly unfair. It affects the poorest people who've done the least to contribute to the problem. Would it be beneficial to all concerned? Would it build goodwill and better friendships? Well, solutions would. So I sat down and I rearranged my whole presentation while everybody was eating their lunch into the four-way test. And when I started to give the talk, I could see that there was a lot of folded arms, a lot of sort of side eye at the woman who'd invited me, a lot of, this is what happens when you let her invite the guests, that's not going to happen again. But as I started to walk through their value system, I could see the arms unfolding. I could see people leaning forward. I could see the head starting to nod. And at the end, I'll never forget a local banker who I'd met a few times before, who had always been cordial but distant. He came up to me with the most bemused look on his face I'd ever seen. And he said, you know, I never thought too much of that whole global warming thing, which is the polite Texan way of saying I thought it was a load of crap. But it passed the four-way test. So what can I do? You know, it passed my test. I'm a Rotarian. This is my test. It passed the test. I have to care. What I showed him was that who he already was already the perfect person to care. And in fact, it made him an even better Rotarian, an even more genuine Rotarian than he already was. So another time I was talking to water managers, and water managers care about water. So I decided I was going to give a whole presentation about how climate change affects water without mentioning the words climate and change. Climate variability, sure. Long-term trends, absolutely. Future projections, no problem. It was the same presentation I would give anywhere to anyone, but I took out the words climate change. And at the end of the presentation, a woman came running up to me this time, and she grabbed my hand and she pumped it very enthusiastically. And she's like, "That was great. I agree with everything you said." And then she said, "Those people who talk about global warming, I don't agree with them at all. But this makes sense."
Wow.
So with the story that you just mentioned, one thing that I've kind of noticed is that people do tend to... So if you can avoid the words climate and change, their attitude does begin to change because they're not seeing it through the lens that they usually do. I'm wondering if there's any way that we could, you know, bridge that gap such that more people will take a more active role.
I'm glad you asked that. And the answer is yes. I wasn't able to talk about this in my book, though, because it's an experiment that we did after I wrote the book. So this is brand new, hot off the presses. Nice. I teamed up with researchers at Yale University, and we created a series of four very short videos. Like, I'm talking a minute or a minute and a half long. And each video talked about climate change from the perspective of a core value that someone who identifies as Republican would share. So often Republicans care about free market. They care about personal liberties. They care about national security and the military, and they care about Christian values. So we made these four short videos with authentic messengers, with a two-time Republican congressman talking about free market solutions to climate change, with the head of a libertarian think tank talking about, you know, personal liberties and how climate change affects them, with a retired Air Force general talking about national security, and with me as a scientist and as a Christian talking about a Christian perspective. So here's the really cool thing. They didn't put people in a room and make them watch the videos and see if it affected their opinion. They put the videos out on social media in real life. They paid to have them boosted into people's feeds in three different congressional districts on Facebook. In other words, they used Facebook for good. And
imagine that.
Yes. And they didn't even spend a lot of money. I mean, they just boosted them, and then they tracked public opinion in those districts. And guess what happened? Democrat opinions went up a bit. Republican opinions about climate change went up twice as much.
Wow.
Why? Because they were hearing about climate change from within the frame, like you just pointed out, the frame that they identified with, and it made all the difference in the world. And so my only question is, why the heck are we not doing this everywhere?
One of the exciting things on that actually is some of my conservative friends are waking up to that issue way, way, way more, especially when they see me bringing your book around at work. And everyone knows me as the podcaster guy, and this is generating a lot of conversations. And that really excites me. There's a guy I sit next to who is on the board of the fundraising committee for one of the next Republican candidates who I actually used to work with. And he and I have talked about climate change. Another Republican candidate is a former weatherman. There's YouTube videos where you can see him talking about climate change up, down, and center. So he knows it. And he talks about it from a
meteorological
perspective. Thank you, Sylvia. Thanks for bailing me out there. And he talks about, you know, year by year, the records are undeniable. So I see some hope in that area. I also have some people at church who refuse to talk about it because it's all a big liberal hoax. So it's both discouraging and encouraging at the same time, you know? And
yep.
Are those videos that you mentioned available? I'm curious.
They are. If you Google new climate voices,
okay,
you will find them and you can use them.
Outstanding. I'm going to add that to our notes here real quick because I had one more value that I wanted to talk to you about. Just like how you framed the conversation according to the Rotarian values, I've actually taken it upon a personal project from my own sphere of influence. So I've got a lot of conservative friends. They've identified their values, and you already named them, you know, national security, fiscal conservativeness. There's one that you talk about in your book a little bit, the value pro-life, and I'm not talking about anything related to abortion or women's rights. I'm talking about pro-life, like people's right to live. And that's one thing that I'd love for you to talk about, how climate change is absolutely a pro-life issue.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that is a huge one for me personally, because...
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
I mentioned earlier that climate change is a justice issue, and that's why I became a climate scientist. As you mentioned, my undergraduate degree is in astronomy and physics, and I was planning to be an astrophysicist, and of course that involves lots of math. Yep. But when I took a class on climate change that showed me that climate change is not only an environmental issue, it is a poverty issue. It's a hunger issue. It's a resource scarcity issue. It's even a refugee issue. It's a human issue. And the poorest 3.5 billion people in the world have only contributed to 7% of global emissions. That is profoundly unfair. Yet they are the ones who are being impacted most by a changing climate. So if you just look at countries, rich countries versus poor countries, climate change has already increased the gap between the richest and poorest countries in the world by as much as 25%. And that is just profoundly unfair. But then you zoom into the individual level. How is climate change affecting people? Well, first of all, when we burn fossil fuels, it produces air pollution as well as heat-trapping gases. And while the heat-trapping gases are building up in the atmosphere, wrapping an extra blanket around the planet, causing it to warm, the air pollution is just sitting there and we breathe it in. And it's responsible for almost 9 million premature deaths per year. That is more than double that of COVID per year.
And by premature deaths, can you define that real quick, just so I know?
Yes, it's people who die before they're supposed to because of air pollution. Yeah. Yes. So you would not be dead if it were not for this air pollution. That's what that means.
Wow. I wasn't sure if it was like a certain number of years of life shaved off average or something. You know, you know how weird death charts can be. But yeah, that is pretty insane about the whole justice issue thing. And that also brings me to another difficult point. What if something that somebody cares about would be negatively impacted by helping climate change? For example, if somebody is really into the spendthrift part of military spending, for example, for their district or something like that. I know that the United States military is the number one global polluter. So it feels like you run into like two problems there. One, telling somebody to dull their sword that is already way too sharp. Or two, that you run into a couple problems.
You do. So the military is the largest polluter if you look at organizations. It's not the largest polluter if you look at oil and gas companies or if you look at countries. There are certainly some people, and they're not too many, but there are some people where climate solutions wouldn't benefit them. And those people are primarily the people who benefit in a significant financial way from the consumption of oil and gas. And I'm not talking about individual coal miners who are just trying to put food on the family for their table. I'm talking about the executives with the 7, 8, and I don't know how many figure salaries. I really have no idea what they look like, but I know they're a lot bigger than yours or mine. Mm-hmm. That's who I'm talking about. For the military, it surprises people to know that they are one of the biggest investors in clean energy because they know that fossil fuels present a tremendous risk, a security risk to them. a security risk in terms of what parts of the world the United States needs to keep an eye on and possibly have a presence in, and also, too, a security risk when they are in full operational mode, when they have to be continually supplying fuel for all of their operations. So I'm not trying to excuse what they do in any way, shape, or form, but if somebody is very into the military, that video that we have with New Climate Voices with the retired Air Force general, and there's a brigadier also who was in charge of the supply line in Afghanistan, and I gave a talk with him once, and man, he had some powerful stories about the risks that fossil fuels pose directly for the lives of people in the armed forces in Afghanistan. So people who are very concerned about that, there are plenty of military voices to point them to that show that the risks of continuing to depend on fossil fuels far outweigh the benefits for the military. And it makes sense for the military to be leaders in leading that transition as soon as possible.
Yeah. One of the folks that we loaned this book to actually is a former guest on the show, a major in the Air Force right now. His name is Major Carlo Trinisi, and he actually wrote a whole bunch of questions for the outline. So there's very high involvement. In fact, there's more citations in his notes than you can shake a stick at, all about military reports on the threats of climate change as a threat multiplier, as well as various bases that will be threatened with sea level rise and everything you mentioned. So they've definitely got eyes on it. That's for sure. I had a quick question real quick about a previous thing. When we're talking about pro-life, one of the things that I was trying very hard to research was anything from something like, I don't know, the organization Compassion International or any organization like them where climate change is definitely on their radar. Reason why I said that is...
Oh, I can tell you who. Okay. So it's not really on the radar for Compassion International, but World Vision is all over this.
Okay.
So is Tear Fund. So is Oxfam. So is the Red Cross, Red Crescent. There are a lot of organizations that get this because at the granular level, if I could just give you a couple of quick examples of how climate change affects people's lives. Let's look at what happens right here in North America. When we have a heat wave, the low-income neighborhoods that were redlined can be 15 degrees hotter than the richer neighborhoods in the same city. Mm-hmm. That leads to all kinds of health issues, all kinds of problems for people who are already vulnerable. Let's look at what happens when drought devastates farmers in Malawi. Child marriage has been outlawed in Malawi for 5 years already. And when it was outlawed, numbers started to go down. But drought struck and farmers couldn't feed their families anymore. And so when someone came around offering to marry their 12-year-old daughter, child marriages are on the rise now, with girls as young as 8 years old being married off because their families cannot put food on the table. And climate change is exacerbating that issue. I mean, the way that climate change affects our lives just absolutely breaks my heart. We also know that air pollution affects dementia in older adults. It affects learning disabilities in children. We know that the massive floods that are occurring out west as we speak to each other right now, we know that the people who don't have insurance, who don't have resources, who live in lower income neighborhoods, lower lying areas are the most affected. We know that with wildfire smoke that choked the airs this summer, people who are already sick, people who couldn't afford to, you know, live inside or have good air filters, they're the ones who are most affected. Climate change truly is a pro-life issue, and I mean that in the sense of our entire life.
Wow.
Every aspect of our life is affected by climate change, and for health reasons alone, we shouldn't be using fossil fuels.
That's definitely all very powerful statements. I mean, health, it seems like everything, the individual, the society, the world, as like a giant organism. But I thought of just a small activity to kind of get the point across after reading some of your book. I was thinking me, Gabriel, Merrill, and Elliot would go around just like one round, and we'd say something that's important to us, and you tell us how that's affected by climate change.
That sounds great.
Ooh, gosh, I'll have to think about this. If you're ready, you go ahead.
All right. What is important to me?
Okay. So when we talk about right now, there's supply line shortages for various things. Let's just say somebody who is a food connoisseur who likes, I don't know.
No, I was talking to you personally, though, Gabriel.
Me personally?
Yeah, like something that you're into, and then she'll tell you how.
Oh, gosh. Okay, sure. Oh gosh, my hobbies aside. Okay, well, I'm into podcasting, obviously, and I'm into reading books and all these hard ones. My wife and I enjoy hiking in the Sandias here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. How about that?
Oh, okay. Okay, that's a great thing. So I don't live too far away from you. I just live across the border in Texas. And I know that New Mexico has experienced devastating water shortages and wildfires as climate change is altering our rainfall patterns. Mm-hmm. So the local ski hill, so Sandia and Santa Fe, a couple of years ago, they couldn't even open. And that threw a lot of people out of work. Also, snowpack in New Mexico is an important water reservoir. Yes. And when it doesn't snow in the winter, that water doesn't exist and those ecosystems and those people go without. And then with the wildfires they had up by the Los Alamos area, I mean, that burned down, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of acres of forest and endangered many people's lives and their livelihoods and their health because you're breathing in the smoke. And of course, you also see invasive species moving poleward as it gets warmer. Wow. So New Mexico is such a special landscape, and it's very arid, and it has such unique ecosystems and unique peoples that are perfectly adapted for the climate it's had for thousands of years. And today that climate is changing faster than any time in its history. Yeah. And the character of New Mexico is changing with it.
And I think New Mexico green chili might become Colorado green chili. Actually,
we'll burn down Colorado before that happens. Okay.
God forbid.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, good one. Okay, yourself, Sophia, or Elliot, or Meryl?
Well, I was gonna say, I enjoy coffee.
Okay. Well, I hear you because I enjoy coffee too. And I actually spent a number of my years growing up in Colombia in South America, which is a big place that grows coffee. Well, coffee's grown on the mountains. It's grown in these fields that are, you know, sort of like this on the mountains. And as it's getting warmer, the optimal location to grow coffee is shifting up the mountain. But of course, you only own certain fields, right? And so if the optimal place to grow coffee shifts out of where you own, then your coffee isn't as good. We see that the quality of coffee is being affected, and Colombia itself has experienced a big, big change in its rainfall patterns as well. So wherever we live, we know that we have wet, dry, wet, dry, wet, dry. But as climate changes in many parts of the world, including Texas and New Mexico and including Colombia, what's happening is we're seeing wet, dry, record-breaking droughts, record-breaking floods. Why? Because warmer air holds more water vapor. And as it gets warmer, it's accelerating the hydrological cycle. So storm comes up, sweeps up way more water vapor and dumps it. And then a high pressure system comes by, which is what causes drought. And because it's hotter and drier, that high pressure system sits over you for longer, directing storm systems away from the region. So there's actual physical reasons that we as scientists understand why climate change is taking this natural pattern of wet and dry and stretching it in both directions. And that affects coffee crops.
How about either of you?
Sure. So I get to work. This is Elliot. I get to work with children a lot, and I love what I get to do with them. And so I'm kind of curious because we want kids to be empowered and be able to do what you know they might be best at doing later on, and to thrive. And so I'm kind of curious how will this shape like what career paths are available, you know, how's that kind of a pie chart going to change, and will things, you know, like what I do, which is sometimes considered disposable, you know, will certain career paths even disappear for our children?
That's a great question. Well, first of all, in poor countries, when resources become scarce, when there's a famine, when there's a flood, when there's a disaster, the first thing that happens is kids get pulled out of school. So even, you know, we take for granted that we can even educate our children. But in a lot of countries, parents' abilities to educate their children is being called into question by climate change. So their ability to have any career at all, other than some that doesn't require education. Here, though, what we're concerned about, and I hear you too, because I'm a parent, and I want the best for my child too. They're growing up in a world that if we don't fix climate change, will be much less secure, much less safe, much less stable. It's going to be a lot harder to have a job that one of those jobs that we really enjoy that really only occurs when you have a society that is stable, when you have an economy that is thriving, when you have clean water coming out of the tap, when you turn it on and food in the grocery store when you go there, when you're not just constantly scrounging to survive and get by and stay safe, you actually have the luxury of, you know, of creativity, of artistry, of caring about other people. Yes. My sister's an artist too, I should say. So all of those really are on the line unless we truly have the stable world that we have taken for granted the last few hundred years.
Ooh, so I got one. And so after all, this is a mathematics podcast. I am very passionate about math, and I'm wondering how climate change will affect the field of mathematics, if you can give us any insight.
I was afraid you were going to say cats. I was mentally preparing for cats. But I'll take math for sure. That's a good question. So I would actually, and I hope you don't feel like I'm dodging this at all, but I would say that that fits a little bit with the answer that I gave to Elliot too. The ability to be a mathematician requires a stable society with a stable educational system, with the a really sophisticated set of job opportunities, where again, it's not about subsistence. It's not about just making sure you got food on the table and a safe place to live. You are actually examining the mysteries of the universe with mathematics. And in order to have the ability to do that, we need that stable society just as much today as we do, as we did before. I mean, if you look at, you know, some of those young girls in Malawi, for example, who are growing up in homes where their parents can't put food on the table and they're at risk of being, you know, married off at age 10, they do not have the luxury to even complete an education to begin to pursue a career in mathematics. And so we are really fortunate in what we have today. And I want that for everyone. I want every little girl to be able to have the option to study mathematics, or to be every child to have the option to be an artist or a musician. I want people to be able to run podcasts and read books and talk about things and thoughts rather than just worrying about how we're going to survive. Because again, it's not about saving the planet, and it's not about the extinction of the human race. It's about whether civilization as we know it will survive. And most of the things you've asked me about depend on and require civilization.
To that end, if you don't mind, I might dovetail on this. There's actually a specific math related thing in the book that actually talks right about that. So if you don't mind going to applied mathematics, Dr. Hayhoe, you had just said that, you know, civilization as we know it depends on us moving away from fossil fuels and radically changing things. This comes from a quote from chapter 10 in your book. This is one of two tweets that I tweeted on the Breaking Math Twitter handle. And this one was specifically about climate modeling, which is heavily involved in mathematics, and a climate modeling that you were involved with in Texas that resulted in perhaps the most radical emissions reductions under Governor Schwarzenegger. I was wondering for our Breaking Math listeners, if you could talk a little bit about what you did with that climate modeling, how you improved the resolution, what the climate modeling showed, and what the result was in terms of government regulations.
Sure. So what I do is I work with climate models, which are mathematical representations of the climate system. And we use those because we don't have other Earths to experiment with. Other scientists can actually have things to experiment with, but we don't. We only have one Earth. So we build an Earth using the most powerful supercomputers in the world, and we populate that Earth with the fundamental laws of physics expressed through nonlinear fluid dynamics and radiative transfer, finite differencing, and all kinds of techniques that we learn about in math go into these giant models, and we use them to ask what-if questions. What if we continue to depend on fossil fuels? What will the planet look like? And not just the planet, but what will average summer temperatures in Sacramento, California look like? The answer is Death Valley. What would California's winter snowpack that provides half their water supply look like? The answer is there'd only be 10% of it left. What would the Napa and Sonoma Valley look like for growing grapes? Well, the only place you'd really be able to grow those grapes is in the backyards of some people in San Francisco. That would be it. So those are the real world questions that we can answer with math when we use math to turn the fundamental laws of physics into a model of our planet. And I work a lot with statistics as well, because I bring in the statistics by looking at the real observations in the places that we're concerned about, and I connect the global models with the real observations at weather stations and weather stations around the world using some pretty sophisticated statistics. We look at, we sort of tease out the different signals in the data. We do a lot of Fourier transforms. Yes, we look at a lot of probability distributions. We do a lot of mapping on multi-
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
Dimensional surfaces. So we do a lot of math. We use MATLAB, we use R all the time. And all of that is being used, being harnessed for good to figure out how our choices matter, to warn everybody of what's going to happen if we don't change our ways. And so one of the most interesting books I read over the pandemic, and I read a whole ton of books, was called Scientists as Prophets. And it drew connections between the Delphic oracles of old and the scientists of today as individuals who stand slightly outside society with access to specialized knowledge that basically warns society of what will happen if they continue on their current path.
We actually talked a little bit about that on episode one of our podcast, Forbidden Formulas, how elitism has embedded itself into our educational system. I do have a question about your work. Now that you mentioned the tools that they use and all that kind of stuff, and I know a lot of jobs can be difficult and have things that aren't worth doing about them. But is it worth being in a profession where you have to use MATLAB?
Well, I am going to say that within my own research group, we have a little bit of a conflict because I'm more of an R person myself, and my top number two is a MATLAB person. And so we are constantly going back and forth, and we just had an issue where MATLAB is not set up to run more than a million concurrent jobs on a parallel processing system. They just didn't code it in. But we need to run more than a million jobs. And I was like, ha, if we were doing it in R, it wouldn't be a problem. And he's actually talking to the MATLAB people. We're actually trying to get MATLAB to update their own package software because it's not meeting our needs right now. But I will say that MATLAB's visualizations are generally superior to R. And I do love the way you can sort of click and expand when you're looking at a sort of a nuance of a surface. So there's arguments to be made in both directions. And I really don't want to take sides, but if I had to, I'd go slightly in the direction of R. Yeah.
MATLAB was, I think it came out of our alma mater.
The UNM math department is in there.
They're always pushing MATLAB on us, so we're very familiar with MATLAB, you know, both the pros and cons of it. So
the cons.
Okay.
I'm gonna stop doing whatever to MATLAB. But
okay, very good. Now, real quick, I understand that Elliot may have to go soon. So I am thrilled that we have an artist on our team with Breaking Math. We love when you can integrate math and art. And I'd like to give Elliot the floor where he can talk a little bit about what you worked on and your song choice and the lyrics, and then we'll play some cool songs.
Thank you so very much. So, and here's, I'm going to tie it in. Here's why I really wanted to be on this particular episode with Dr. Hayhoe is something that struck me about what she's really good at doing is effective communication. She is a bridger of peoples. Yes, I used bridge as a verb. But she brings people together. And music also is one of those great cohesive forces. And it's also, in my opinion, a really great way to communicate and get points across in a way that's digestible and can be joyous and can be fun. And I was already thinking of music even when Dr. Hayhoe mentioned, you know, making use of Facebook and ways to get into through social media. It's really important that you can, you gotta get people's attention and keep them listening. Hey, music's kind of fun. And I've always loved music parodies. And it's not just because they are protected by the Supreme Court, so you can do them without having to worry about legal issues. But they're a lot of fun. I grew up with Weird Al and the like. And so just talking with Gabriel here about what can we do, I thought, why don't we get the point across, celebrate our special guest, and show how maybe parody, when you don't make it too funny, can be taken seriously. And so all those things wrapped together, that's what I wanted to do. And if it's okay, why don't I play the first two, and then we could maybe talk just a smidgen about why select certain songs. Yes. Listeners, if you can guess the demographics I'm shooting for, good for you.
Yeah. Okay, so song choice is important here. I will play the first two, and then we'll have Elliot talk about them and why he chose those songs. Okay, without further ado.
CO2 made ton by ton. Billions this year overdone. Made for greedy self-interest. Dirty sky ignored.
All right, so here, that was just the introductory kind of a piece. And then here's one where we get to celebrate our guest and also have a little extra fun.
I recycle, drive less far, spearheaded ways to clean roadsides and share Earth Day.
Hashtag perfect planet.
Let's see if these efforts work to save us. May we check and find we'll be okay.
From the tunnel takes flight and interviewers at times. Our kids are yelling my mind. So let's wake up, wake up. The findings are what complete. We're sitting in the hot seat, debating cold and high heat. So let's wake up.
Hey, ho,
let's go.
Woo, awesome.
Thank you very much. Yes. So besides the fact that one of the songs kind of has Hey Ho already in it, without the doctor part, but still, yes, what would you like to discuss about choosing music for effective communication about climate change?
I'm curious. Can Dr. Hey Ho identify the songs that were selected? No problem if you can't.
Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi, and then Blitzkrieg Bop, of course, by the Ramones, yep. One of my favorite songs.
Woohoo! Okay.
Yay, I hit your demographic.
Well, look, when you're called Hey Ho, you know everything from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs to Naughty by Nature and everything in between that says Hey Ho. And I have a little beef to pick with the Lumineers because their song is called Ho Hey, and clearly they got those two words the wrong way. It's Hey Ho.
Yeah, very good. And then there's Carry On My Wayward Son, but what were the lyrics on your, or what was the song called on yours, Elliot?
Oh, yes, Carry On Wayward Son. Okay, I may have picked that one because it's from one of my wife's favorite groups, too, so Kansas. And, yeah, I wouldn't mind speaking them because that one was short. And, hey, I put a little science in this one. CO2 made ton by ton, billions this year overdone, made for greedy self-interest, dirty sky ignored.
Wow. Outstanding. Outstanding. Good for you, Elliot. Good for you. Yeah. So I know we have one other one. One tiny little short one. And should we go ahead and play it, or is there anything else you want to say?
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. And this one's David Bowie because David Bowie's David Bowie. Well, it's me, and it's a parody. But here we go. I'm kind of wishing you talked about avoiding the word change and changes, but I had to do David Bowie's changes. So here we go.
Da, 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 da. We're oh so slow, what are we waiting for? Planet's time is running out, and as we live and breathe and every kind and thoughtful shots to save this green birthplace. We've got to greet as we tire ourselves to agree to wide severe consequences. Oh, how long we'll just meet our maker, if much too slow to do our best.
Though the climate changes,
burn, displace, and pain,
climate changes,
catastrophe with an upper hand.
Though the climate changes,
churning waste and gain,
garbage raining,
we're gonna have to start a better plan. Time to change us.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Elia. We greatly appreciate that. Those are awesome.
Thanks for letting me share.
You know, for months, I've actually been trying to put together a climate change playlist. And so I really appreciate that, Elliot. One of the songs that I wanted to do on a climate change playlist, it's a cynical one, but sometimes you got to get those feelings out. You know what I mean? What's the one that came out with the recent Justice League movie? Leonard Cohen, Everybody Knows. Y'all know that one?
Yes.
It is depressing. But sometimes you got to get those feelings out and at least, you know what I mean? Like make art out of it. So, yeah.
My favorite climate change song goes, the part of it goes, you're bundled up now, wait till you get older. The media man beg to differ, judging by the hole in the satellite picture. The ice we skate is getting very thin. The water's getting worse, so we might as well swim. The world's on fire, how about yours? That's way like it, would never get bored. Smash Mouth,
that's right. That was from Shrek, wasn't it?
I made Smash Mouth,
okay.
But anyway.
Okay, before we move on, do you guys have any other climate change themed songs that you like to listen to when you're in certain moods?
So Aloe Black has a new song out that's all about climate change.
Wow. Okay.
What's it called?
I'm going to find the title right now because I don't have the title at my fingertips.
Okay.
I heard it on Earth Day. I was actually part of an event with him on Earth Day, and it was really, really great.
Wow.
It is called Other Side.
Okay. Nice. We'll have to read the lyrics on that to that one. Very cool.
Hey folks, it's your buddy Zuzex here to tell you again about Brilliant. Brilliant is an amazing asset for continuing your education or just brushing up on some basics. And if you're listening to this show, I'm sure you love learning. Maybe you already use Brilliant. Well, did you also know that it makes an amazing gift for the holiday season? Do you need another Christmas present for grandma and she loves a challenge, but you feel guilty about getting her another Sudoku book? Do you need a Kwanzaa present for your sibling who loves logic challenges? Educational gifts are the tradition. Maybe you want a Hanukkah present that your grandchild can use for the rest of their life. Brilliant can offer all of those things. So don't worry about getting beat up this Black Friday over that new toy. Go to brilliant.org/breakingmath. The first 200 listeners get 20% off. And to everyone listening, have a happy, brilliant holiday. Hey, Breaking Math fans. First, I want to thank you for listening. I have an important message for everyone. You can start your own podcast right now with Anchor. Anchor lets you create and distribute your own podcast. Just get an idea, record, and upload. It's just that easy. Anyone can do it. I'm on my way to accomplishing my dream, and you can too. Just get on your device's app store and download Anchor. It contains everything you need to make a podcast. With Anchor, you can put your podcast on all the big platforms. Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Amazon, and more. Reach the whole world with Anchor. Best of all, Anchor is free. You have nothing to lose with a free platform. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
So, one of the things now, if we're going to shift gears real quick back into our interview questions, there was a couple of things in the book that I really wanted to talk about. I had mentioned earlier that in preparation for this interview, I had actually gotten copies of the book and given it to certain people. Our friend, who Major Carlo Trinisi, who's in the Air Force, of course. I also have a homeschool Christian Science teacher who comes from a very, very conservative background. We have an extremely cordial relationship. Very, very cordial. And
you have a broad range of friends beyond the average.
I'm known for that. I network. That's what I do. And it excites me because there's just some salient points that I think are spelled so explicitly in this book. And one of them was what I'm about to read. I actually tweeted this page, and as you know, whenever I read a book, I highlight and write notes everywhere, and I do graffiti all over the book. When I tweeted this page, we had never had more social engagement on a tweet ever. I think overnight, I had 120 likes and something like 38 retweets from mostly PhDs. It was really, really, it was fascinating. Now, the page was the discussion on the study that you took part in with Norwegian scientist, and I'm sorry, I don't know that I'll say his name correctly, Rasmus Benestad, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. For our listeners, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that study and how it relates to an attempt to examine our own biases and trying to address the critics, but more importantly, what your findings were.
Mm-hmm. So we all suffer from biases, cognitive biases, and we all engage in motivated reasoning where we use our brains to go out and find all the reasons why we're right. Not what we should think, but why what we already think is right. So as scientists, we are particularly sensitive to this. And also, we always want to check everything. People often don't realize that scientists are actually extremely conservative in the true sense of the word. We want to be very, 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 very sure about things. I don't even know how many varies that were, but I think I might need a couple more varies to really be accurate. So Rasmus Benestad and a number of us decided a few years ago to take the scientific studies that have been published in the scientific literature, which means they had to undergo peer review. They had to be reviewed by at least two other scientists before they were published, that found either that climate was not changing or that humans were not responsible. It was just the sun or natural cycles or something else. Now, just for context, there have been over 3 million scientific studies published finding that climate is changing, humans are responsible, and the impacts are serious. 3 million. But over the last 10 years, there were 38 studies published that concluded either that climate wasn't changing or that humans weren't responsible. So we wanted to scratch that last itch and find out, do they have a leg to stand on? Do they have a toe to stand on? Do they even have a toenail to stand on when it comes to saying that, you know, we haven't checked in every place or every corner, there's something we haven't considered? So we took these 38 studies, and here's the crazy part. We deconstructed them and recalculated every single one from scratch. That's like doing 38 separate studies just for one. And I'm sorry to say we didn't use MATLAB, we used R to do this.
R is better.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. We used R, and Rasmus did the bulk of the work because he is an absolute R wizard. He has written many R packages. And we all followed behind checking his work because we wanted to make sure that, you know, we were actually looking at everything that they looked at. And you know what we found? In every single one of the 38 studies that we examined, we found at least one error. And in some cases, it might be a mathematical error. In some cases, it was the fact that they left out a factor that they shouldn't have left out. They made an assumption that was incorrect. They didn't calculate something the right way. In every single one, we identified a quantitative error that if you fixed that mistake, and some of them had more than one mistake, obviously, but if you fixed that mistake, it actually brought their results completely in line with the 3 million other studies that have already been published. I mean, does that not just blow your mind?
That is, I mean, that's like one of those science things where it's like, you know, like you hope to have a p-value of less than, you know, a certain amount. And it sounds like you, that kind of thing where it's like, oh, the p-value is like the same as it is for like measuring matter. Well, not really, but because yeah. I know the p-value for that is what, like 10 to the negative 15th, negative 20th. Anyway.
Yeah, something yes. Crazy. I've actually pinned that tweet, and I know that thankfully, thank you for responding to that. You responded to it with a link to the article, which is awesome. So if any of our listeners would like to read the study, it's linked on the pinned tweet on our Twitter. Is also available elsewhere. It may be behind a paywall. Is it behind a paywall? Do you know?
No, we made it freely available, and it was actually, it's one of the most downloaded, if not the most downloaded study for the journal that we published it in.
Oh, okay. Outstanding.
Isn't that awesome?
Wow. That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. I had a quick question.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Boto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.
social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Unless anybody else. Okay. So earlier today, I was watching on my lunch break at work the YouTube show today, and you were talking about some upcoming projects you're doing with the book, including a workbook. Can you tell us a little bit about what you have upcoming with this book?
Oh, yes. So what I'm doing with this book is I'm creating all kinds of free resources for people to be able to use the book. So I'm making discussion questions if they want to use the book for a reading circle. That's a great way to have a conversation, is just say, hey, let's read the book together. And I'm making short videos to go with each section. So there's 5 sections in the book, and I'm making a short video for each section. So if you have a book club and you like to watch videos, you can read the book, you can discuss it with the questions, and then you can watch the video. And then for people who want to use it in the classroom, I am also making classroom activities to go with each section of the book and an annotated reading list. So if you want the students to go and actually read some of the original journal articles I talk about, like the one that we were just talking about that I did with Rasmus, or some of the social science studies that talk about motivated reasoning and cognitive biases, or the new study I just described to you that we did with Yale University, where we put those 4 short videos that started from a conservative frame on social media, I annotated reading lists so that people can dig deeper and they can actually engage with students in the classroom. And so that's what I'm working on. And my aim is to have it all available by January so people can start using it in the new year.
Oh, that's fabulous. I wanted to make sure to include resources on this episode because this episode is very, very close to my heart, to all of our hearts, obviously. So thank you for that. Thank you for adjusting my mic. Yes. So speaking of resources, something else that you pointed in my direction was the YouTube series, Years of Living Dangerously. You know why I love that YouTube series? Okay. Outstanding visuals that are very helpful. Short videos. Each thing is what, like 3 to 5 minutes? Is that it? Is that
Are you talking about global weirding?
No. Well, there's that, but there's also there's a Years of Living Dangerously
yes.
YouTube page, and every video is like under 5 minutes. You know, and that's
yes.
fantastic. You got Arnold Schwarzenegger.
They had a whole TV series that actually won an Emmy, which was amazing.
That's right.
But then they did something super smart. Was they took the long segments of the TV series and they made these super short little videos on YouTube that are a lot easier and quicker to watch. And that's what you're referring to. And those are awesome. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. I'm trying to give resources. Yeah. And it was hard for me to find the original series. I hope I can find them. I think they're behind another paywall or something. I don't know. I'll search. But yes, you also have your YouTube show Global Weirding, and I believe you're working on your final season. Is that correct?
I am. Yes, we have 2 more videos left to do.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, okay. Very cool. I have it pegged. I haven't gotten my alerts yet for the new episodes. I'll have to go back and check those out. So.
Oh, no. Yeah. We haven't put them up yet, but we're working on them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Very good. Okay. I feel like I'm hogging the mic. Do you guys have any other questions?
I just had a couple of questions about the economics of climate change. So it strikes me, I mean, Gabriel, you said you were listening to a podcast a couple of days ago where they talked about climate change doulas and stuff, and that made me think of a question. Did you want to just plug that real quick?
Oh, so this was actually an earlier interview, in fact, with Dr. Hayho. It was on the YouTube, I saw it on YouTube. I don't know where all the streams. The JFK Library, there was somebody interviewing you, and she's a host of a PBS Nova series on YouTube as well. And her name, I have it in my notes, and I'm going to say it wrong. She brought up a fantastic analogy, and I keep track of outstanding science analogies. And one of the things that she brought up was kind of a double metaphor. She talked about the world's relationship with fossil fuels being kind of like somebody being in an abusive relationship, and they just don't want to see it and they don't want to face it. And all their friends are talking to them about how bad this relationship is, and their own mental gymnastics just don't want to face it. And then she said, sometimes people need a breakup doula, if that conversation rings a bell, right? And she talked about you being America's breakup doula with fossil fuels. I thought that analogy was so rich, I wanted to plug it on this podcast.
Oh my goodness, yes, she was awesome. We had such a good discussion. And of course, she's an accomplished writer and journalist herself. And so she had so many good things to say. And I love that. It's like breaking up. And you know what? Our relationship with fossil fuels was originally a good one. Yeah. So fossil fuels brought us into the industrial era. Yeah. Fossil fuels provided us with so many of the benefits that we appreciate today. I mean, just imagine what your life would be like with no electricity, no refrigeration, no way to travel other than your foot or a horse. A woman's day then was an endless, endless day of drudgery and chores. It was very rare for women to be educated, and we didn't have the vote. It was very difficult to travel. It was very difficult for anybody to be educated if you weren't upper class or middle class. It was a very, very different life before the Industrial Revolution. And thanks to the Industrial Revolution, we live twice as long now as we used to. The average lifespan in the most civilized country in the world 200 years ago, the UK, at that time, in the Western world, I should say, to be specific, was 40 years. And now our average lifetime is 80 years. And so we live longer, we have much higher quality of life, we have much better medicine, we have much more opportunities to pursue the careers that you spoke about, artistic careers, studying math, you know, doing the things that we want to do. And all of that came about because of fossil fuels. And so when I talk about fossil fuels, and I actually have a Global Weirding episode that does that, I say that I am profoundly grateful for the fossil fuels that and the benefits they brought us. But now it's time to end that relationship. It is time to break up with gratitude for what they brought us, but with awareness that this is not a healthy relationship at all. And in fact, now fossil fuels are actively harming us, and it's time to move on to something better, which is clean sources of energy.
Yeah, see, what has struck me a lot of being similar to is like a chemical addiction, like an addiction to opiates or something like that. And what specifically in the sense that, like, you know, a lot of people start opiates with that they need it for pain management, and it gets worse and worse. And what I know about people who get off of opiates is that a lot of times mindfulness exercises and are a big part of it. A big part of it is like acknowledging, like, you know, and it has, there's all these soft skills that are used to treat what essentially is a neurochemical problem, where you have homeostasis normally, but if you are supplied with a constant zaps to your pleasure cortex, you get into a state known by some researchers as allostasis, where you expect something more and more. And I guess my question is, do you think some of the soft skills that we have learned, especially over the last 10 years about addiction, could apply to either creating media, creating approaches or campaigns, whatever, for ending our addiction to oil?
Well, I think that that's very insightful, because that's another good example of something that is originally provided benefits, very necessary benefits. But as with almost anything, too much is not good. And the journalist I was speaking with before at the JFK Library event, her name is Ray McTufee. And that she's the one who came up with the climate doula, sort of the breakup doula idea. I think you're right. I think that right now the issue we have is not a lack of scientific understanding of the problem. We have known since the 1800s that digging up and burning coal and gas and oil is wrapping an extra blanket around the planet, causing it to warm. In the 1930s, scientists actually measured the warming of the planet. By the 1960s, scientists were so worried that they officially warned a U.S. president, and that was Lyndon B. Johnson, of the dangers of climate change and the urgency of climate action. So why are we in the mess that we're in today? It's not because we lack physical science. It's because we lack an understanding and an implementation of how we as humans interact with difficult, challenging, thorny issues. And we have a lot to learn from psychology, from mediation, from, I think, addiction therapy, like you said, is probably a good place to go to. There's a lot of psychologists who are studying anxiety, and which a lot of people experience in relationship to climate change, and of course, denial as well. And so in my book, it's interesting. One of the, I think the top one-star review for my book on Amazon, authors always get one-star reviews, is one where it's not from somebody who rejects climate science. It's from somebody who is so panicked that they were outraged that I wrote a book about emotions and psychology and feelings when all we need to do is act. We just need to act. We need a book that just says act. And they were outraged that I was talking about these other sort of, you know, touchy-feely things when we just need to act. Well, first of all, obviously I agree, we just need to act. But why aren't we acting? It's because of our psychology. And so that's why I'm a physical climate scientist, but in the whole book, there was only really one chapter on the physical science, maybe two if you count when I talk about what I was doing for California. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the book was all about the social science, the psychology of how we interact with information and how we confront existential threats, which in a nutshell is not well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard not to see the problem as focused away from the global worker. And towards an issue of global capital. But it's really interesting to see the kind of people who can be swayed, who's doing what about it, and all this stuff. And it's definitely a thorny problem. I mean, Meryl, do you have any more questions? How about you, Gabriel? Because I do have a couple.
So I actually do have one. One of the reasons I was excited to find out that you were going to be on the podcast is that I'm actually a Red Raider myself. I went to Texas Tech for my undergraduate.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I did math and computer engineering there. Mm-hmm. And what I'm a little bit curious about is, do you know of any climate-related work? Do you do any sort of work with those departments in particular?
I do. So I actually just gave a seminar a couple of months ago to the math and statistics department at Texas Tech University. And for many years, one of my graduate students was always from Alex Trindad, who's one of the faculty there in math and statistics. I always had one of his graduate students working with me because I need somebody who has a solid grounding in math and statistics to do a lot of the work that I do. So that it's a very small world and there's so many points of connection. I love that you brought that up. So when I came to Texas Tech, I've been there for 15 years now. I was the only person doing anything related to climate science there. I was all by myself. And I really struggled to find a place because the reason I ended up there was because they wanted my husband. I was the plus one who came along for the ride, so to speak. So I found some friendly faces, some people over in the biology department who were studying ecosystems and how they responded to warmer temperatures. And together we sort of built on that foundation, applied for grants, ended up hosting a climate science center, which is partially supported by the Department of Interior. And now we have a climate center at Texas Tech University, which, as you know, Lubbock is the second most conservative city in the whole U.S., politically speaking. Provo, Utah, number one, Lubbock, number two. We have a climate center that has faculty associates from over 50 faculty associates from just about every department and just about every college in the whole university. Is that not amazing? And I just really feel like if we can do something like that in West Texas, the heart of oil and gas and cotton country, can't we do it anywhere? And how do you do it? By doing the most important thing every single one of us can do, which is using our voice to talk about why it matters and what each of us can do to help fix it.
Awesome. And I think that's a really good last thought to end on. And I do have one last minor question to ask. What is your favorite weather fact?
Oh, so I love seeing amazing phenomena in the sky. And just the other day, I got to see the most fantastic set of anti-crepuscular rays I had ever seen. So crepuscular rays are rays that appear to be coming out from the sun, shooting out from the sun. They are actually parallel, but because of a trick of perspective, they appear as if they're coming out from the sun. Well, anti-crepuscular rays happen when the sun drops below the horizon, but of course the light is still refracting into the sky. And if you look at the opposite point from the sun, so the sun's below the horizon, but you look at the anti-sun point in the sky, you see these rays shooting out from it across the sky, and it's just absolutely amazing. There's so many phenomena. If you just open your eyes and you look at the sky, you can be amazed almost every single day with what you see, because nature is incredible. And what is really amazing is we can explain what we see using math and physics.
All right. So Dr. Catherine Hayhoe, thank you so much for being on Breaking Math today. Elliot had to drop off early. So I'm Sophia.
And I'm Gabriel.
And I'm Meryl.
And this has been Breaking Math. If you would like, the holidays are coming up. We have a poster for sale. Just go to facebook.com/Breaking Math Podcast. We actually sent one of these posters to Dr. Catherine Hayhoe.
Two
of them.
I accidentally gave you two in case you have any friends, you know, who may want one as well. So, yeah, yes. I do that sometimes. So, and actually, there is one last thing that I wanted to say as well. This has been an absolute pleasure. I have gotten into podcasting for a few reasons. I could talk about my conservative family members that are lost to Fox News and things that I find very, very hurtful and frankly scary. To that end, we've had some success with Breaking Math that has been remarkable locally, especially as well as the world over. We have contacts right now with Albuquerque Public Schools. We're in an active relationship with them to build podcasting as a platform. We have a great relationship with the University of New Mexico Communications Department and many others. I find that I'm actually called to be more of a journalist than an engineer. And as this is a passion issue for me, I'm constantly thinking about what I can do to get people having the conversation more and to what ways we can use podcasting and our partners that we're working with to do this more. I don't have a comment more than that, but we're trying and we appreciate you coming on this show. And anything that we can do with ourselves or any of our partners, just, let us know.
You keep bonking the table.
Oh, sorry. My bad. I keep bonking the table. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, I'm just thrilled to have you on the show. We've had Dr. John Cook on the show as well. Last year, I have his book too. See? His book too. Ta-da.
His book is great.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah, it's great. It's great. And also, I look forward to the feedback from my, I don't know, like five people across the political spectrum who all read it. So I'll have feedback. I'll probably send it to Laura from all of them. So yeah, I guess that's all.
Oh, I would love that. And I love that you have your colleague who's in the armed forces. He sent you all those notes about how the military cares about climate change, because they do. Yes. And you know what I found is no matter where you are, there's always people who care. So when we start viewing governments or companies or organizations as monoliths, mm-hmm. then we lose sight of the fact that there's people inside who want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And there's people outside who want to make a difference. And there's people sort of connected who want to make a difference. And how we make a difference is each of us working where we are. And so, you know, even in, we talked about, the oil and gas industry and how they're so responsible for the majority of the carbon emissions. But inside the oil and gas industry, there are amazing people who are working to transform our energy industry into clean energy using the skills and the abilities and the resources that they have inside that industry. And inside the military, there's amazing people who are working to turn that ship around and make it independent and clean energy. And inside the government, there's people. And inside churches, there's people. There's people everywhere really working to make a difference. And when we're able to focus on what we have in common rather than what divides us, I feel like that's where we can really make progress in the world. And it sounds like exactly what you're doing with this podcast, right? Yeah.
Yes, indeed. At least I hope so. That's the hope. Yeah. We're going to keep trying.
And if I could just say, I'm so impressed with Pumpkin. She just sat there so quietly right there, whereas my cat was being a total pest. He was like pulling down cords and everything, and he just finally decided to go to sleep. But I'll pull him over here to say goodbye, just a second. Yeah. So here's Dr. Evil.
Hey,
yeah. If I were at home, I would have a cat, but I do not.
No cats here, not in the studio. I'd love to have one, but oh well. Breaking cats.
Studio
not
cat for all the studio.
Not
lines.
A good idea.
Yeah. So cool. Very good.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.